Welcome to Outbeat Now. I'm Greg Moralia, and here with co-hosts Jeff Basham and Joel Bellagio. Outbeat Now is a public affairs show for and about the LGBT community. You'll find us here on Outbeat Radio on the fourth Sunday of each month. We've got a great show for you tonight. Jeff Basham begins the hour with a follow-up story and interview with Ray Tilton. And on the second half of the hour, we'll be joined by members of the Sonoma County Peer Outreach Coalition as part of the Outbeat Youth segment. But first, here's Joel Bellagio with this week's Outbeat Radio News.
This is Outbeat Radio News. I'm Joel Bellagio. In international news, the Mexico Supreme Court has ruled in favor of gay adoption. The matter was up for discussion after the Supreme Court earlier this summer decided that Mexico City did not violate the Constitution when it legalized gay marriage. And the Mexico Supreme Court determined that all 31 states in Mexico must recognize the same-sex marriages that are conducted in Mexico City. The last legally challenged element of Mexico City's gay marriage ordinance was the issue of gay adoption. 9 of the 11 justices of the Mexico Supreme Court voted that same-sex married couples have the right to adopt. And while Germany is considering income tax equality for gay couples, the UK is saying that a Catholic adoption charity cannot ban gay couples, and 100,000 people celebrate Montreal Pride. In the United States, land of the free and home of the brave, supporters of California's gay marriage ban filed an appeal of a federal judge's ruling striking down the voter-approved law. A federal judge in San Francisco overturned California's Proposition 8, which restricts marriage to one man and one woman, ruling that the law violates federal equal protection and due process laws. The appeal was filed by Protect Marriage, a coalition of religious and conservative groups that sponsored Proposition 8 and wound up defending it after California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger and Attorney General Jerry Brown refused. In the ongoing case, the federal judge ruled gay couples could begin getting married on August 18th. However, he allotted 6 days for the Ninth Circuit to review his ruling. The Ninth Circuit chose to have the ban remain in place as the case works its way through the courts. Oral arguments in the federal case will be heard by the court in the first weeks of December. Meanwhile, the California Republican Party's candidate for governor, Meg Whitman, is reported to have given evidence that she is no friend of Dorothy. Some would say she has more in common with the Wicked Witch of the West. As Equality California reports that Yes on 8 supporter Meg Whitman has stepped up her anti-marriage equality campaign when she joined Attorney General candidate Steve Coley by saying that, if elected, she will use the state's vast resources to defend Proposition 8 in court. According to Equality California, Whitman says she will cut the budget due to lack of resources, slashing services for those most in need, yet she has no problem using the state's limited resources to advocate for discrimination against two people simply because they are lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender, and in love. While in the state of Wisconsin, a social conservative group filed a lawsuit challenging Wisconsin's domestic partner registry, arguing that it's a violation of the state's constitutional ban on same-sex marriage. The lawsuit, filed by members of Wisconsin Family Action, contends the registry creates a legal status substantially similar to that of marriage. The same-sex marriage ban, actively pushed by the same group bringing the lawsuit against the registry, was added to the Constitution by Wisconsin voters in 2006. According to a statement made by the president of the conservative group, a reasonable person observing this registry would easily conclude that it is intended to mirror marriage. However, the registry benefits do not come close to the rights that come with marriage, according to the executive director of Fair Wisconsin, the state's largest gay rights group, as the registry extends 43 benefits compared with 200 benefits for married couples under state law. While on the national political scene, the White House announced that President Barack Obama has made recess appointments of 4 nominees whose confirmations were being held up in the Senate. Among them, Richard Sorian, an openly gay man who will be the Assistant Secretary for Public Affairs at the Department of Health and Human Services. And closer to home, Sonoma County HIV/AIDS Support Organization Face-to-Face presents Art for Life 2010 on Saturday, September 18th from 2 to 6 at the Mary Agatha Firth Center in Windsor. To support Art for Life and the work of Sonoma County's Face-to-Face, check them out online at www.f2f.org. And there you have it. This has been Outbeat Radio News. I'm Joel Bellagio.
This is Jeff Basham, and I'm joined by Ray Tilton, who was the victim of a violent act that occurred during the Pride Weekend 2010 in San Francisco. Welcome to Outbeat Now, Ray.
We're glad to have you join us tonight to talk about Paint Saturday, which took place in San Francisco on June 26th of this year. First, for our listeners who are not aware of what Paint Saturday is, can you explain the event?
Yeah, Pink Saturday is a tradition that's been going on for a number of years. It was started by the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence in San Francisco as sort of a pre-Pride celebration party on Saturday night. And, of course, as the years have gone on, it turned into, you know, a huge, huge, huge event with hundreds of thousands of people that attend.
So you mentioned it was started by the Sisters. Are you involved with the Sisters?
No, not at all.
Oh, okay.
Very good friends with lots of them, but...
Certainly, certainly. What was your impression of the event, and how did this year's party compare with previous years?
Well, unfortunately, because of my assault, which took place on Friday night, I was not able to attend Pink Saturday.
Did you hear from any of your friends that were there? Was there any notable difference in Pink Saturday from previous years?
You know, most of my friends said that they thought it was pretty similar to the last few years. There was a lot of angry people, a lot of little fights and things going on within the party. Of course, that's something that all of us have noticed over the years as this event has grown, that the level of violence and incidences within the party have really grown.
Did they say what caused any of that?
Nothing really. By Saturday night, some word had gotten out what had happened to me Friday night. I think people, at least people who know me and that were starting to find out what had happened, not saying they were oversensitive, but they were certainly more aware of the little spats and fights. But nobody said specifically whether it was drinking, race, gender,
certainly,
hate, or anything like that.
Yeah. Most of our listeners are aware that there were incidents of violence that occurred at Paint Saturday and your assault that happened the night before. Can you tell us what happened during your assault?
Sure. Friday night, I was hosting some friends who were in from out of the country. And we had gone out Friday night, and we had gone out south of Market, and then we came to the Castro, and we were having a nightcap at 4:40. And we were coming out of the bar at about 1:45, you know, around closing time, and a group of people walked by and attempted to pull one of my friend's wallet chain, like they were trying to take my friend's wallet. And my friend turned to me and said, "Can you believe that?" He said, "Those people just tried to, you know, take my wallet." And I mean, literally, that's all he got out of his mouth. The four of them flipped and turned around, said something to the effect of, you know, "Are you accusing us of something or whatever?" And they didn't even punch me or my friend who made the statement. They punched another friend that was with us.
Oh,
and
wow.
Thankfully, I had just put my out-of-country friends in a cab, so they actually weren't there and they didn't get to see it, which I was glad because it was their first Pride, first time in San Francisco, etc. So they punched my friend in the face. I tried to get in the middle to just stop it. I did not, you know, throw a punch or anything. I just tried to get in the middle because I'm a pretty big guy, and I thought maybe I could at least, you know, block it or stop it. And within a flash, the four of them had me down on the ground. And one had his knee in the middle of my back. They had me pinned face down, and they were, you know, kicking me and punching me in the head and the face and, you know, in my body and stuff.
That's really, really unfortunate. I'm sorry that that happened to you. What's your recovery been like?
My physical recovery hasn't been too bad because most of it was just superficial. I've had a little bit of blurriness in my right eye from a pretty good kick I took to the head.
Mm-hmm.
But my physical recovery hasn't actually been that bad. It's been a little more of the emotional, mental side of things.
Certainly.
That are starting to kind of surface, because I was actually a victim of a hate crime 13 years ago.
Oh, okay. So then you're, yeah, of course, that's bringing things back up.
Yeah, it was bringing some issues back up. So.
Certainly. You mentioned there were four people. Did all four of them get caught?
Well, as a matter of fact, after this happened, the manager and the people at 440, they brought me into the bar because they knew me. I used to work there. So they brought me into the bar, which of course meant people got away. They were more concerned about me. Was I okay? So then I came out, my friends and I, we walked maybe a block and a half down 17th Street away from the Castro to my friend's apartment to kind of regroup and sort of pull myself together. And we came out of the apartment, and there they were waiting for us, the same four people.
So they were waiting for you to attack you again, you think?
Yeah.
Oh, so what happened then?
Somehow we managed to get by them, and from the time we were walking from Hartford up 17th, I was kind of letting them think they were going to attack me again while my friend was on the cell phone calling the police.
Oh, okay.
So when Orphan Andy's called an ambulance for me, these four people went up and sat at a table at the 17th Street Plaza, waiting for us, I can only assume, to come out of Orphan Andy's.
Wow.
Of course, the police swooped in. By the time they were arresting them, the ambulance had already gotten there, and I was in the ambulance being attended to. I pulled myself together enough so that they opened that ambulance door one by one, and I identified all four of them.
Good, good. I'm glad you were able to do that.
They were arrested.
Oh, great, good. Has there been any further action taken? Are they going through the justice system now?
Yeah, they were arrested and released initially on a misdemeanor assault charge. But given that I'm pretty well known, it became a high-profile thing. It is not being swept under the rug.
Do you feel that this was a hate crime?
It's interesting that you brought that up, because after the violence that happened Saturday night, Sunday morning that I said they've taken my pride away from me, and they've taken this Pink Saturday and turned it into a Red Saturday because of the bloodshed. I kept trying to figure out why were people so urgent to claim what kind of a crime this was. Was it a hate crime? Wasn't it a hate crime? And my response is any violence equals hate.
You mentioned that you're referring to this now as Red Saturday, and you've started a group on Facebook called Red Saturday to draw attention to what happened. Can you tell us more about Red Saturday and what it is?
There was a lot more violence that went on that weekend that was ever reported, as, of course, I found out more and more as time went on. And on Sunday, I actually went out, got on the Muni, tried to go down to Pride, and I couldn't. I mean, I turned around and I had to come back.
Yeah.
And my friends, all of my friends were actually deeply affected immediately because it was somebody they care about. And all of a sudden, it just wasn't a Pink Saturday, and it just wasn't a big happy Pride to a lot of people that weekend. And so Sunday it just came. Like I said, I was talking to my friend. I said, it feels more like it was a Red Saturday rather than a Pink Saturday, like it was intended. Pink, you know, happy, gay, have a good time, celebrate. We took something tragic originally, which is what the Pink Triangle signifies, and we turned it into something positive and up for our community.
Yeah.
And so I guess that's what I was doing for myself personally by starting this, from taking something that was pretty horrible and trying to make something positive out of it.
That's great. It's been talked about that the events and of violence happening are seeming to make the event look like an out-of-control party like the Castro Halloween turned into, and of course we all know that the Castro Halloween was subsequently shut down. So what do you think about that? Do you think that the Castro is a safe place for large gatherings? Do you think that Pink Saturday should happen next year?
I have seen over the years how when events grow, how hard it is to not control the event, but control who attends these events. And that's what is sad to me. The message that is getting out is that our parties are out of control, and it's reflecting on us as a community. And that's where some of my other layers of anger are coming in, because it's not our fault. It's not that things are out of control because we are out of control. It's because people that are coming in from outside sources and outside communities are now traditionally coming in because they know it's a party where they can get in fights, steal people's money, and get away with it. That's what it is. They know they can get away with it. If they knew they couldn't get away with it, it would stop. And unfortunately, what are we going to do? Are we going to shut down Gay Pride? Because, you know what, even if we shut down Pink Saturday, do you think that's going to change people wanting to party all weekend long in the city during Gay Pride? Hell no.
Mm-hmm.
People are going to continue to want to gather and party that whole weekend.
Certainly.
And so what are we going to do? Are we just going to keep letting people take away our gay holidays, like what you said with Halloween? You know, what's going to be next? Is it going to be Pink Saturday? Is it going to be the Dyke Gathering? Is it going to be Pride? Is it going to be Folsom? And the crazy notions and ideas, trust me, that have come to me from people, and it's been sweet, like putting up really hard, firm gates and asking people for IDs, and you're not from San Francisco, we're not going to let you in. Just crazy ideas.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, there's all those ideas are the first ones to pop in your head when you want to try and solve a problem like that.
Yeah.
But then you realize all the administrative side of trying to enforce those and fairness and what image you want to project and all that stuff. So it gets really hard. And I think that's best left to the Pride Committee and the police and whoever else might be involved to look at those and try and address them. Last month on Outbeat Now, we talked to the public information officer from the San Francisco Police Department, and he gave us some information from his point of view about safety in the Castro. And I just wanted to ask you if you have any advice in that area of just general safety for someone that's just going from Sonoma County or Santa Rosa down to the Castro for a night of partying.
Well, I'll tell you one thing first and foremost that unfortunately, just the truth. Being gay and going to the Castro is not a safe mecca anymore, and it hasn't actually been for a while. And again, some of it is coming from this repeated tradition of people know that people are in the Castro, they're getting drunk, they're gay, a lot of gay people are coming out of bars drunk or having a good time. Yeah, a lot of gay people maybe aren't necessarily physically strong and able to look out or take care of themselves as well as some other people. And they prey on them. They absolutely prey on them. And so my advice is don't think it can't happen to you, because it can and it will. If it can happen to somebody like me who's almost 6 foot tall and 250 pounds, it can happen to anybody. So watch your back. Put your wallets in your front pocket. We even had some of those safety tips on the flyers on the back. Carry your whistle, have your cell phone in your front pocket, et cetera, those types of things. But unfortunately, the best thing that you can do is just always be aware of your surroundings. And again, I know that's hard to do sometimes when you've been out for an evening having a good time and bar hopping or doing fundraisers in a bar where we're drinking and having a good time.
Certainly.
And it's just not, it's a safe mecca that it used to be. And it really did used to be a lot safer, because I know I've been around for a long time.
Yeah.
And the climate has changed, that's for sure.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like it. Do you feel that in the changes that you've seen take place in the Castro, that the San Francisco police and groups like Castro Patrol, and if there's any other citizen watch groups, are they responding sufficiently in your view?
I think they're responding as well as they can. You know, we need to sit down with the Pride organizers. We need to sit down with the police department. We need to bring all of the safety groups together, like CCOP and COOV and any other different types of sort of grassroots organizations like that are trying to offer safety and security. We need to bring them together, and we all need to sit down and hammer out who can take on what responsibility. And you know, we need it funded.
Yes.
And where else should we go but our own community for that?
Certainly, that's really, really sound good advice. And is there anything else that you'd like to add?
As I'm looking at the future of what Red Saturday is going to be about, the LGBT Center have said they want to put together some forums and different things like that, and they definitely want me to be involved in that, which I am, of course, going and am looking forward to, hopefully Red Saturday having an impact in that particular arena. As much as it's probably going to ruffle a bunch of feathers, I'm not going to attack any organization or group, because that's not my nature. I work from the heart, always have and always will.
I'll be looking forward to seeing what occurs, and we'll look forward to news about what's going to happen next year in June.
There's global potential for Red Saturday to be represented in a lot of really great positive ways in other communities that are either having trouble with violence or want to raise the awareness of it.
Absolutely. Well, it's great to know that that stuff is on the horizon, and
yeah,
we'll be certainly happy to have you back here on Outbeat Now anytime that you want to talk about or promote any of those type of events. Thank you very much, Ray, for joining us on Outbeat Now tonight, and I wish your recovery continues in a very positive way.
We've been speaking with Ray Tilton, who was a victim of a violent act that occurred during the June 2010 Pride Weekend celebration in San Francisco. Ray's group, called Red Saturday, can be found on Facebook by searching for Red Saturday. This has been Jeff Basham for Outbeat Radio.
And we'll be back with the Outbeat Youth segment right after this music break. Support for Outbeat Radio on KRCB-FM comes from members and from the Advanced Fertility Associates Medical Group, providing comprehensive fertility care to men, women, and couples wishing to expand their families. Advanced technology, old-fashioned care, serving Santa Rosa and the North Bay for 25 years. You'll find them on the web at afamd.com. Welcome back. You are listening to Set Me Free from the Out in the Silence soundtrack, performed by God Dez and She. It's time now for the Outbeat Youth segment. And welcome everyone to this edition of Outbeat Youth. I'm Greg Moralia. Outbeat Youth is a segment for and about queer youth in the North Bay Area. We're here each month as a part of Outbeat Now. And tonight, we're going to begin with a youth profile of Aiden Sigmund. Aiden is an intern with Positive Images in Santa Rosa. And here's what he had to say. Aiden, welcome to Outbeat Youth.
Thanks for having me, Greg.
So, tell us a little bit about growing up and how old are you now?
I'm 20 right now. I turned 21 in August.
Okay, so what was life like growing up for you?
Relatively normal, but as far as queer issues go, I guess I started kind of realizing that I was different when I was 3. I was sitting in the back of my mom's minivan, crying and bawling, and I was just like, "Mom, why wasn't I born a boy? Like, why can't I be a boy?" And she snapped her fingers and she said, "Poof, now you are." So that was kind of my first coming out, I would say, at 3.
You really remember that at 3 years old?
Yeah. So does my mom, actually.
Wow. That's pretty incredible to be able to have that kind of recollection back then and that type of awareness. And I've heard, you know, young people say that they've had feelings that young before, but to really be that certain about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's kind of interesting because it was never really something that I thought about, or it was just kind of like an incongruency that I felt between my body and just like who I was. Stopped wearing dresses as soon as I had any control over what I wore. So actually most of the way through high school, people that were not, you know, that I didn't know very well, they thought I was a guy anyway. When I came out in high school, it was actually a surprise for them because they were like, oh, wait, what? My elementary school life, you know, it was pretty normal. I pretty much buried the feelings of being trans because I had perceived this kind of social taboo around it. You know, there was this big sex change operation that people got. And, you know, you didn't know who people were, so there was a stigma going along, and I felt it. It made me scared. I had a moment I remember when I was 9, just kind of giving up and saying, you know, there must have been some reason that I was born this way and there's nothing that I can do about it, so I have to live with it. So, and that was pretty much when I just stopped. I buried any thought of, you know, feeling like a boy or, you know, even at that point being attracted to women, because I had no idea until I was about 15 that I was attracted to women. And then I came out as a lesbian. Because I thought, hey, these people wear men's clothes. They like women. I wear men's clothes and like women. So that sounds like a good fit. It just didn't quite fit right for me. I was doing a lot of work in the gay activist community in Chicago as far as through my school's GSA and with the chapter of GLSEN that Illinois has, but it split off into its own thing. So I was finding out more and more about trans issues, and I had a friend come out as trans. He was the first trans guy that I ever met. And it kind of hit me that there was something that I could do about this. So I came out to my girlfriend at the time when I was about 16, you know, saying that I was, you know, I was trans and I was pretty sure about it. And that I really wanted to start doing something about it. So 2 days after I turned 17, I started going to therapy, which is a requirement if you want to start hormone replacement therapy, which is one of the first steps a lot of people take when they decide that they want to transition from one sex to another.
So this was all taking place in Chicago.
Yeah, I grew up in Chicago. I graduated from high school there.
And everybody says that California is so much more accepting and such an easier place to be. Give us a little perspective on that.
Yeah, you know, I think what I found about California is that the people on the left are way more left than other people, but on average, I would say that people are actually more liberal where I grew up, if only because, you know, in my experience in high school, it was more of a problem to be a Republican than it was to be gay.
It's got to be a lot more complicated to not only work through your sexual orientation and your sexuality, but also your gender identity. What helped you sort those things out?
You know, honestly, as far as the sexual orientation goes, I feel like it was buried a lot under the gender kind of dysphoria that I was feeling. I didn't really have any sexual attractions to people until into high school. And I just kind of figured it out. I was on the train platform one day and I was like, wow, all these women are looking fine and these guys are not. So I just, like, you know, that was kind of my just like, all right, cool. Well, I like women. As far as the gender goes, I think the way that I like to put it is it was a lot harder for everybody that was in my life and had to get used to it than it was for me. Because by the time that I was telling people, I had been thinking about it. So I was ready to do it. After I found out that I could do something about it, I never really felt any pull to not. It was really just, okay, how do I come out to my parents? How do I come out to people? Like, how is it that I go about doing and starting this process? Especially because at the time I was a minor. And because transitioning is a medical process, you technically do have to be 18 to make any decisions on your own. Otherwise, in Illinois, you have to have both of your parents sign off on any medical decisions that you make. So, you know, that said, interestingly enough, in Illinois, 17 is the age of consent. And it's also the age where you can start going to therapy and not have to inform your parents that you're going to therapy. So I started going to therapy 2 days after I turned 17, and I was in therapy for 10 months while they fought over whether or not they could give minors hormones. So I was one of the first several people under 18 in Illinois to get hormones.
So when you finally did tell your parents, how did that go?
I honestly don't remember it. I remember being very scared. They took it pretty well. You know, they had a lot of trouble at first getting the pronouns and the name right. I didn't have a name chosen out when I first told them. I remember my mom telling me that my dad had told her that he thought it was just a phase and that I would grow through it, but he never confronted me about that. So I think that they really took it well, and we're still on good terms as far as that goes.
Well, what do you like to do for fun?
Work. I like to surf. I hang out with my roommate James a lot, and we go on bike rides. Right now, I'm working my way through the Odyssey for school next fall. I'm going up to Portland, going to Reed, so I'm definitely stoked on that.
Wow. Wow. Very, very good. And what are the plans then? You're going to go to Portland. What's the future look like for you in terms of goals and dreams, and what do you want to do?
I definitely want to get my BA. I am trying to major in something that would combine sociology, philosophy, physics, and mathematics. So that's going to be a challenge, but I'm sure that I can do it. And as you know, beyond that, I think that it'd be cool one day to be a professor. I think I definitely would like to go to grad school, but that really is going to depend on money situations. And if I can't do that, I definitely want to go to a different country and live there for several years and just travel, gain life experience, work.
So which country strikes your fancy?
I really want to visit France. I took French this past semester. Greece is where my family is from. So those two. Italy, I'd like to visit. Basically, I want to go all around Europe. I'd like to visit China and Japan and Vietnam. And I really actually have an interest in going to some country in Africa. Just kind of places that are completely different than here is where I want to go. Learn what people do there.
Very good. So you're working at Positive Images now as one of the interns, I understand. What's your role there?
I help set up for the meetings, so I make sure that everything's kind of organized and ready to go as far as event signups, what we're going to talk about with the leadership in PI, and go over debriefings and talking about how the organization goes for the members, for the leaders, for the adult volunteers. Right now, we're all kind of starting, me and Jim and Bree, this adult group that meets on Monday nights just to talk about where PI is going and how they feel about where PI is going. So just to kind of try to bring our adult mentors and adult members in more. So that's kind of my project right now. I'm also working on a trifold that would make it more clear what we do on Thursday nights for people.
Very good. Aiden, thanks so much for joining us tonight on Outbeat Youth.
Yeah, thank you very much. Happy to be here, Greg.
This month I had the opportunity to talk with members of the Sonoma County Peer Outreach Coalition about their work supporting youth members of our community. And with us tonight is Shauna Friedman, a mental health program specialist and the facilitator of this group, and three peer youth leaders, Marcos Garzalazo, Vanessa Romero, and Jesus Guzman. Shauna, let's start with you. Tell us a little bit about the Sonoma County Peer Outreach Coalition and, you know, how this program came about.
Okay, well, the Sonoma County Peer Outreach Coalition was started at Community Action Partnership of Sonoma County. It's an online social media campaign, and it's run by a group of teens and young adults. Our mission is really to promote wellness about teen mental health and also talk about the risk factors that contribute to mental illness.
Now, I understand that this is a new program and it's being funded by a grant. Tell us a little bit about the grant and where the funding came from for this program.
It's a prevention and early intervention grant, and our part of the grant is really focusing on using social media as a tool to reach teens. We're also moving into a suicide prevention component and doing some public service announcements via YouTube later this year.
Well, that's really excellent work, and we'll look forward to airing the audio from those videos here on Outbeat Youth. And I'm really glad to hear that you're focusing in on issues surrounding suicide, because that's such a major problem for LGBT youth. they're so many more times likely to attempt suicide or complete a suicide than their straight peers. So I understand from your website that this group is really led by peer youth leaders. Tell us about how that works.
Well, we have this great group of peer leaders. It's a dynamic group of young people. They're from all over the county. We have some that are right down here in downtown Santa Rosa, where I live. There's some from Rohnert Park and Petaluma, and we have some in West County as well. We also have some that come down as far from Wallala a couple times a month for our meetings. And they're just a great group of young people, and they lead our social networking campaign. They go online, they do the research, they find the articles, and they post the information. They're really the ones behind it. They're the heart and soul of the entire project.
Well, it sounds like a really dedicated bunch of young people, and we're going to be talking with them a little bit later in the program, but let's get back to you and talk about your role in the organization and a little bit about your background.
My title here at Community Action Partnership is Mental Health Program Specialist. I have my master's in counseling with an emphasis in school counseling from Sonoma State University. For the past 10 years, I've done everything working with children and families. I've worked for the government. I've done teaching. I've been a sexual assault crisis counselor. I've pretty much done a little bit of everything. And what I do with the Peer Outreach Coalition is I'm kind of the behind-the-scenes person. I help train them and help the peer leaders get new information. And I do love behind-the-scenes stuff with the blog and the website and managing the social networking sites.
Well, very good. It sounds like you're kept plenty busy. So for LGBT youth here in Sonoma County, what types of services does this program provide them?
Really, our goal is to provide a wealth of information and resources for the LGBT youth in Sonoma County. And really, LGBT youth need all the support that they can get. Recent statistics show that LGBT youth are 4 times more likely to attempt suicide than their heterosexual peers. And those who come from rejecting families are 9 times more likely to attempt suicide. And when you're in a situation where you're faced with harassment or bullying, or you're constantly worried for your safety, that's when you find yourself at risk for mental health problems like anxiety and depression and further mental health problems.
Wow, now I heard you say that LGBT youth are 4 times and in some cases 9 times more likely to attempt suicide than their straight peers. Those numbers are far worse than what I read in the past. And so it sounds like this problem has actually gotten worse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just reading this. This is the latest research from San Francisco State University.
Well, those numbers just seem really staggering to me. Especially when you consider that Sonoma County was recently identified as the second most gay-friendly community in the country. I mean, I guess it just goes to show you that really no matter where you live, LGBT youth still face a great deal of adversity and need a lot of support. Well, tell us how young members of our community here in Sonoma can access the Peer Outreach Coalition and the information and services you provide.
Well, our primary websites are Facebook and Twitter. Those are our social media sites. We also have a website and a blog. They can go online and they can access any of them, and we have a wealth of resources and information on there. We have topics ranging from anything from sexual health to drug addiction to mental health. We pretty much have everything on there. A great way just to get involved is just to go online, like our Facebook page, join the community, join the dialogue, submit a question to our website, follow us on Twitter, follow our blog. It's an online community, and it's really about getting involved there.
So could a young person join this community without divulging their name? Could they remain anonymous, or is there some sort of registration required to join one of these websites?
Absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of privacy settings on Facebook, and you can certainly follow a blog anonymously or follow along Twitter. I mean, there are ways to definitely conceal your identity. And just because you're following and you're reading and getting involved doesn't mean you have to be out. You can still just follow and get the information that you need without exposing yourself if they're not ready for that.
Well, that's great. So what kinds of services have you seen LGBT youth request so far from these websites?
Well, at this point, I've attended some trainings recently. mainly focusing on transgender youth. And from what I have seen, there's a great need for transgender youth to have access to mental health services. I think the statistic that I read was said that transgender youth and gender nonconforming youth are some of the most bullied and the most harassed by their peers. So it's really important to have that support system and to have those resources available.
Yeah, I can only imagine how difficult it must be in high school. Of course, it's been a long time since I've been in high school, but it's got to be really, really challenging for a trans youth these days. So schools, you know, gotten started here. Most schools have been in session now for a week or so. Tell us about your plans for getting involved with high schools here in Sonoma County, and specifically, how are you going to reach out to the gay-straight alliances on the campuses?
Absolutely. We're on our Facebook page. We have links to different pages and different organizations that we like and support. Outbeat Youth is one of the pages that we've linked to, of course. We're also linked to the Piner High School Gay Straight Alliance. And really, if any GSA at a school has any sort of Facebook page or a website, we are happy to link with them. We're happy to promote the GSA. Also, our peer leaders are happy to come in. We're happy to give presentations. We're here. We're available as a resource, whether they want to come to us or we come to them.
So this organization doesn't just live on the web. I mean, you have an actual office and have it staffed during daytime hours. So a principal or a teacher at a local high school could give you a call and talk about the services that you offer, right?
That's correct.
Okay. Well, if you're a teacher or a principal and you'd like the contact information, you can go to our show notes page at outbeatyouth.com. You'll see a link at the top of the page. Just click on show notes and you'll find all of the links to all of the websites associated with the Sonoma County Peer Outreach Coalition, as well as their telephone number and a brochure where you can find out more about how this organization can help you. Well, let's shift gears and talk with some of the youth peer leaders of this organization. And Jesus, I'm going to start with you. Tell us a little bit about how you got involved with this organization.
I've been working in after-school programs for a while. I've been working with different extracurricular activities for some time since early on in high school. So it seemed to come naturally when this program was announced, and especially since Facebook is taken off as such a phenomenon, that it was a matter of kind of giving back to seeing family members, friends that are being affected by this, family members that are part of the LGBT community, and seeing what's going on. It seemed there was a little bit of time to give back in that regard. So when it was presented whether I wanted to participate, it just seemed to come natural that it was time to give back.
Well, Vanessa, how about you? Tell us how you got involved.
I got involved because I got an email through the club that I was in at the time at the JC, and I really liked their idea of like this organization, and I just wanted to get back into helping the teens in Sonoma County with mental health, because that's kind of an area that I'm going in with school and psychology and stuff, so I just wanted to help out.
Well, that's great. This will give you some real experience then as you prepare for your future career. Marcos, I know you've been involved in this area for a while now, working first with Positive Images in Sonoma County. Tell us how you got involved with the Sonoma County Peer Leadership Coalition.
Actually, I heard about it through my... I heard about it at PI. Shauna called PI. She had a question or something, and we touched bases. And then Abigail, who is the director of the Santa Rosa Community Health Center's HIV program, she told me about it too. And at first, you know, I wasn't sure if I had the time, but then, you know, I mean, I have time to wait while I harvest my strawberries on Farmville. So I figured, you know what, might as well take a look. So I contacted Shauna and applied, and now I'm here.
So tell us what the experience has been like for you all so far with your work here, and what kinds of things you've been doing.
A little bit of what we do is we go online. We do a lot of the research as far as what goes behind the information that we put out on Facebook, on Twitter, on the blog, on the website. I know, as for myself and including everybody here, at this point we spent hours just going through the web. We've used things like StumbleUpon to just about any tool and online resource that we can, and then double check what we find. and making sure that it qualifies and meets what we're looking for. It's been a really great experience being able to learn from some of the things that we found on our own, and then being able to share that with all the fans that are on the Facebook. So remember, click on the like page because you want to get that information.
So Vanessa, how about you? Tell us what's the most interesting thing that you've been involved in so far.
The most interesting thing I've done? Basically just all the research that we've been doing to post on the Facebook and stuff. Everything that I have to research and look at, it's really interesting. But I think like the most interesting part of it, I guess, is just sharing it with everyone and like promoting it and letting my friends know about what's going on and just trying to get everybody involved.
So what kind of feedback have you received from the items that you've posted on the site?
A lot of people have liked my post, I guess you could say.
Okay, well, I mean, at least you know that somebody's reading it, right? I mean, it's always good to know that people are clicking and reading what you've got to say. But then when you get positive feedback that says what you're providing is valuable, I mean, that's rewarding across the board. Marcos, how about you? What's the most interesting thing you've been involved in?
I think the most interesting thing was when I was doing outreach on a couple of other websites that I do not waste my time on. Once you put out the message that, you know, we're doing mental health and we're doing it on Facebook, you know, all these people, I was asking for 25 originally and I ended up getting like 50 people who just, you know, out of the blue send me a message and they're like, hey, Marcos, you know, I hear you're doing this and I'm really interested and I wish there was something like this in our community. Do you know if there's anything like it? A lot of people thought that the Peer Outreach Coalition was a national thing. And I told them, you know, it's right now it's Sonoma County and, you know, a lot of people really wanted to join it. And I think it's just, you know, people have this need for mental health information that they are just not getting. And for us to be out there posting it on Twitter and Facebook where people are all the time, you know, it was just really awesome to see, you know, literally what we're doing, you know, why we're doing it. It was right there.
Okay. Well, I understand all three of you have completed some pretty extensive training to prepare you to do the work online that you're doing. So tell us about what that training has been all about and what it's included.
Probably the one I had the most fun of so far was learning about how to be able to use Facebook and Twitter. I thought I knew most of how to use Facebook, and I was pleasantly surprised to learn that there's a lot more that goes into Facebook and to Twitter. I discovered Tumblr, which I didn't know about before. There's social media as a tool is immense. I didn't know the breadth and scope of it, that there's such a variety and diversity behind it. One of the trainings that was that learning how to be able to utilize the tool and utilize it correctly to the best of our advantage to be able to present the best information that we can.
Vanessa, tell us about one of the things you learned about Facebook that you found most important or that you found most surprising.
I guess what I learned about the Facebook is just not posting 20 things within like a 10-minute span or something. You know, we just keep it to kind of a 3 minimum posts a day because that gets more attention from people and it's not like in their face a lot. So,
well, that certainly makes a lot of sense. I mean, if you're out there all the time and posting constantly, you would become annoying, and I would guess people would then just ignore, you know, just delete you, and then you've defeated the whole purpose. Marcos, how about you? What kind of training have you completed that you found most interesting?
What I found most interesting was we did a QPR, and I'm blanking out on what QPR stands for. It's a new suicide prevention technique. And, you know, working with positive images, we did suicide prevention trainings through the peer counseling program. So I'm thinking, you know, like, oh, you know, I'm pretty savvy on suicide prevention. But, you know, here comes this completely new technique, and it's just really wonderful. And it's really just great to have this new tool that really is going to help us better suit the needs of an evolving, you know, issue within our culture.
Great. Well, there's no doubt that that's really important work, as we said earlier in the show. So as all of you look out into the future, what are you looking forward to? What is really exciting you about the work you're doing here at the Peer Outreach Coalition?
One of the things I've really enjoyed is the amount of growth that I've undergone on myself as far as education, and I'm hoping that extends to everybody else that's been following us on Twitter and Facebook. And I think one of the highlights would be if you actually see the tangible effect of this information. If this and this is what we're hoping that if it hasn't already, that it will, that this information can make some real life decisions. It can actually make, like I said, a tangible effect, a life effect. I know it. This information, as far as what I've learned myself, when the situation is presented, it most likely will, and it's better to be prepared than to be ill prepared. And I definitely feel more suited, and I hope other people will be as well. And when the moment comes, it'll make a substantial difference.
Vanessa, how about you? What's the future looking like?
Well, for the next couple of months, I'm just really looking forward to like promoting awareness of mental health, helping the teens in Sonoma County as much as I can, just reminding them that, you know, that there is help and that they can use the Peer Coalition, you know, to get to where they need to, and that, you know, we're a resource here.
Marcos, how about you?
I really hope that people really start embracing, you know, this idea of mental health and really start taking better care of themselves and really start addressing the issue of the stigma within mental health, that, you know, there's no shame in having bipolar disease or in you know, having anything that falls within the breadth of, you know, mental health. It's okay to be depressed, you know, and I just want people to feel that it's okay, and to have a place where, you know, they're getting information about depression, they're getting information about, you know, bipolar disease, they're getting information about being gay, and it's just something where we really want to start a conversation, because that's really, you know, what's going to, you know, spark, you know, get this fire going. It's going to really, I hope, change, you know, how our community and how our culture really views mental health and anything that falls within the scope of that.
Great. Well, Shauna, let's get back to you. I mean, this is really sounding amazing to me. Is this unique to Sonoma County, or are there other organizations like this throughout the country?
I have seen there are other groups. From what I've noticed, a lot of their focus is a bit more limited. I've seen a lot of groups that are really focusing maybe only on self-injury or only on depression or only on anxiety. There are some out there that I have seen, but I think one of the things that the Peer Outreach Coalition really has is we cover a wide variety of topics, and we're really trying to get that word out there that all of these different factors can relate to mental health and mental wellness, and there's so many things that go into being mentally healthy.
Well, I know that here in Sonoma County, we're really fortunate to have a number of support organizations that, as you said, deal with various aspects of mental health and generally to support youth. Are there any plans for the Sonoma County Peer Outreach Coalition to network and work together with these other groups?
Yes, the Peer Outreach Coalition and actually all of Community Action Partnership has been working with other organizations. We've been working pretty extensively with Positive Images, and we're really hoping to, you know, extend that out there and work with other organizations within the community. I mean, it's really about being culturally sensitive, and it's really about providing a net of as many services and as many programs available to LGBT youth.
Well, that's great to hear. So, Shauna, tell us about your dreams for the future for this organization.
Well, we've already started doing some community outreach because we've realized that not everyone has an iPhone or access to the internet at home. So we've started going out. We attended the South Park Day and Night Festival, and we had a booth there. We're going to the Latino Mental Health Forum in October. We're really just trying to put ourselves out there in the community and really increase our access to everybody. Because even if they don't have internet access at home, they can go to a library. They can go to their schools. I'm just really looking forward to getting us more visible in the community, having more people realize that we're here, you know, hear what we're all about. I'm really looking forward to our videos that we're going to be shooting at the end of the year, which will be on YouTube. I'm also looking forward to maybe adding more members, more peer leaders to the coalition, training more and having more of them come on board.
So tell us how a member of the LGBT community can get involved with the Sonoma County Peer Outreach Coalition.
They can go online. I mean, the basic way they can get involved is what we talked about already, is they can go on, they can like our Facebook page, they can follow us on Twitter, and they can, you know, friend us on MySpace. If they like what they see and they're really excited about it, then they can send me an email, contact me, and we can talk about maybe getting further involved in the project.
So if a teacher or a principal or a community group wanted to get in touch with you and perhaps have you come out and speak, who should they call?
They can call Community Action Partnership. The number is 707-544-6911. They can either ask to speak to me, Shauna Friedman, or they can dial my extension, which is 1052.
Well, great. Well, if you'd like more information about the Sonoma County Peer Outreach Coalition, you can check out their website at www.scpoc.org. And of course, we'll have all of the links to their Facebook, MySpace, and Twitter page posted on our show notes. We've been talking with Shauna Friedman, Marcos Garzalazo, Vanessa Romero, and Jesus Guzman of the Sonoma County Peer Outreach Coalition. Thank you all for being with us tonight on Outbeat Youth. We're definitely looking forward to hearing more from you on future shows. And that wraps up this month's edition of Outbeat Youth. Remember, you can follow us all month long on our own Facebook, MySpace, and Twitter pages. You'll find links to all of these sites on our main website at outbeatyouth.com. Past shows are always available for download and listening on our show notes or via iTunes. I'm Greg Moralia. Thanks for listening to Outbeat Youth. Coming up next week on Outbeat Radio.
It's my world that I want to have a little pride in.
I am Jeff Bashram, and I'll be your host next week on a very special edition of Outbeat Radio. We'll be joined by two amazing transgender women who join me to tell the world.
Hey world, I am what I am.
Vanessa Adderbright and Jacqueline Regina Nugent have both recently completed transition from male to female. In this special conversation, they share their thoughts about growing up, discovering who they really are, and their steps to become that person. That's next Sunday at 8 p.m. right here on KRCB-FM.
Why not try to see things from a different angle?
Thanks, Jeff. That sounds like it's going to be a really fascinating and very moving show. Well, that's it for this month's edition of Outbeat Now. For Jeff Basham and Joel Bellagio, I'm Greg Moralia. Thanks so much for joining us. Outbeat Now is produced and engineered by Jeff Basham, Joel Bellagio, and Greg Moralia, exclusively for KRCB Radio. Support for Outbeat Radio and KRCB-FM comes from members and from the Advanced Fertility Associates Medical Group, providing comprehensive fertility care to men, women, and couples wishing to expand their families. Advanced technology, old-fashioned care, serving Santa Rosa and the North Bay for 25 years. You'll find them on the web at afamd.com. And from the Wells Fargo Center for the Arts, presenting humorist David Sedaris live on stage Saturday, October 30th at 8 p.m., Sedaris is heard on This American Life, also the author of the recent bestseller When You Are Engulfed in Flames, and the forthcoming Squirrel Seeks Chipmunk, A Modest Bestiary. Ticket information is available at 546-3600 or online at wellsfargocenterarts.com. You're listening to KRCB-FM Santa Rosa. It's a little before 9 p.m. Stay with us. New Dimensions is next.